Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy
and Gary Vasilash,
episode 331 for May 12th of 2016. Honda Ridgeline, the untruck truck. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. Okay, Gary, you got to finish the line of the song. The stars at night, they sure shine bright.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
And, why do I say that? Because we're deep in the heart of Texas.
That's right. And today's if you start doing Yellow Roses, I'm way out of my league then.
Well, you got that at least. But, yeah, we're at the media launch for the new Honda Ridgeline pickup truck just outside of San Antonio, Texas, at the ranch. I think this is, what, Rio Cebollo or something like that?
Something like that. My Spanish is... not so good.
Well, my
Yours
Spanish
is, great.
Is very good, and I have no idea what that means.
Mm-hmm.
The closest I can translate that into is this is ranch onion, and I know that's not right.
Could be. Who knows?
Well, okay, we got to let everybody know. We've got Jeff Conrad, Senior Vice President at the Honda Division, joining us right now to talk about the new Ridgeline. Jeff, and it's great to have you on the show here.
Hey, it's great to be here. Glad to be able to spend some time with you guys.
Okay, a couple of years ago, you guys had a pickup in your lineup, the Ridgeline. Did sort of okay, not too bad, but it never really set the world on fire. It went out of production, but you guys haven't given up. You're back with a new pickup. What's it mean for Honda to have a pickup in its lineup?
Well, first let me say the never give up. It was actually a very nice truck, and we had about 250,000 owners, 175,000 of them who still own the vehicle and are very loyal. But we are really excited about the new pickup. The new pickup breaks some new ground in today's market. You know, today's consumer is different than in the past. They're looking for a vehicle that meets their everyday driving and hauling needs, but they want to do it without any of the, quote, traditional compromises to ride, handling, comfort, maneuverability. And we think the new Ridgeline serves that need just great.
So when you guys did the first one, you broke the mold in terms of what someone would perceive a pickup truck to be by going with the unibody. This one continues that approach. Is that what gives you this goodness that you just described in terms of ride and handling, in terms of fit and finish, in terms of NVH, in terms of other attributes of the vehicle?
Yes. So what I mean by that, to expand on that, is, you know, people used to think of, well, if a pickup truck isn't body on frame, it's not really a serious pickup truck. Well, I would beg to differ. You know, the truck that we're bringing to market into this all-new 2017 Ridgeline, it is a unibody truck. But when you look at the rigidity that is built into this truck, if you look at the overall construction of this truck, you consider that it also has independent rear suspension, this vehicle is every bit as strong or stronger than any other truck in its class. And you'll see that, and the benefit of all that is you get a vehicle that doesn't bend and twist. You get a vehicle with the independent rear suspension that gives you great ride and handling and comfort. You also get quiet in the interior. So it's a truck that everybody meets everybody's needs for driving, hauling, but it's also fun to drive. It's pleasant to drive.
And they talk about the class that you're competing in.
Well, we're in the mid-size pickup class, so it's a mid-size quad cab vehicle. But the great thing about this is it breaks some new ground in there in terms of within that class, it has the biggest payload or has the biggest bed of any of the vehicles out there. So it's 5'4". So it's longer, it's wider than the competitors in that specific class. So we think it's going to meet everybody's needs.
Jeff, how do you think that whole segment's going to go? GM just jumped in with a Chevrolet and a GMC, the Colorado, the Canyon. Toyota just refreshed the Tacoma. Nissan's going to refresh its Frontier. You guys are getting in. I got to believe Ford and Ram have got to react to this and come in with trucks of their own. How big is this segment going to be?
Well, I'm not going to guess at how big the segment will be, except to tell you that our forecasts say it is a growing segment. You know, exactly how big is it going to be, that's everybody's guess. But we do know that, you know, the traditional full-size truck buyer, you know, might start to look at some of these mid-size vehicles and say, you know what, mid-size gives me all the room that I need for my everyday, you know, driving and business needs. It's maybe a little easier on my pocketbook. It's easy. It parks in the garage. You know, I can shut the garage door. So it meets my needs. I perhaps don't need that traditionally sized pickup truck. So depending on how many people make that decision, I think it warrants a lot of people wanting to get into the segment.
So how do you move people to think in terms of thinking in terms of Honda in a pickup truck? I mean, if you think about it, that when it comes to sedans, Accord, Civic, you know, people are very loyal to those, just as people are very loyal to Chevy and Ford when it comes to pickup trucks and Ram. How do you change their perceptions or move them in this direction?
Well, that's a great question. You know, at Honda, we have been refortifying our truck business for some period of time now. You know, the reality is we build a variety of trucks, not necessarily pickup trucks, but you stop to consider that we build the CRV, which is the number one sport utility in its category and has been for about the last 11 years. You know, we built a Pilot that is just, it's number one, it will be, we believe, number one in its category in a few years once we get a little additional capacity. But we can't keep those on the shelves right now. They pop out as soon as they're offloaded from the car hauler. Mm-hmm. So we've been building more trucks year by year. Our Odyssey minivan is the gold standard of minivans. So we think it's only natural that we continue to expand our truck series. And, you know, being in the pickup truck business is just a natural. So we think this truck will give us all plus business, and it answers a need that our customers have. You know, roughly 20% of our customers have a pickup truck in their garage. We want it to be a Honda Ridgeline.
Hey, Jeff, with that, we're going to have to wrap up this segment. We've got more people coming on to talk the specifics, more of the engineering specifics of the truck. But I want to thank you for taking your time to come on the show with Gary and I here.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Real good. Hey, we're going to be back with more right after this. Let me show you some of the styling cues on the new Honda Ridgeline that really make it stand out from other trucks in its class. Of course, you got a very Honda-looking front end, big badge like all trucks do. Also on trucks these days, you see some sort of a C-clamp kind of look around the headlamps. Honda's got this the way that they've taken the running lights and put it around the headlamps, something that you'll see on all the major big trucks these days too. Another little interesting bit is this quarter glass right inside the mirror. It actually does help in your visibility. The other thing is, look at this long crease line that runs from front to rear of the truck. It really helps make it look longer. But like BMW does, they don't take that crease line into the fender well. It makes it look like the fender well is even bigger than what it really is. This I find very interesting, the way they've scalloped out the steel for the door handles. It's kind of an oval, very soft look, almost feminine. Kind of surprised me to see this on a pickup truck. The other thing that you'll notice is this cladding on the lower end of the rocker is actually narrower at the front and wider at the rear. That gives the truck more of an angled look, a wedge look, and that helps define it looking as a truck. The other thing you'll notice is, unlike the old Ridgeline that had that flying buttress look to it, boom, the new one, they've cut it off. They really want this to look like a regular pickup, not something weird. They've also added this piece here for aerodynamics. It carries out beyond the cab just a little bit, and it's cantilevered on the inside of it to keep the airflow going down. As you come to the rear of the truck, there's nothing too outstanding from a styling standpoint, but again, you see more aero on the top of the tailgate here for aerodynamics, but something unique to Honda, it doubles. If you remember the old station wagons of back in the 60s and 70s that opened in a double way, Honda's put that on their truck. That, to me, of all these things, is what makes the Ridgeline stand out from other pickups. Okay, we're back from that little styling walk around of the truck, and right now we've got yet another one of the people who helped make this truck become a reality, Kerry McClure, who's the large project leader, which essentially means chief engineer, right?
That's correct. That's correct. The large project leader is one of the terms we use at Honda to confuse everybody else. So
basically the truck is your baby.
You could say that, sure.
Kerry, when you set out to redo the Ridgeline, did you think, okay, we got to go clean sheet, we got to take lessons learned from the last one, we got to add that, you know, take us through the narrative a little bit of how you set about going to develop this truck.
Sure. You know, we always start by going back to the customer and trying to understand what the customers need, what the customers want. And in this case, we had almost 200,000 customers out there in the market that own the previous generation Ridgeline. So we checked with them first to find out what they wanted or what they didn't get in their original Ridgeline. We talked to our dealers, but then we also wanted to expand the product to more customers. So we had to talk to those that maybe didn't purchase the first one and figure out why. You know, what could we do to make them happy as well?
And what'd they tell you, especially the ones who had not bought the truck in the first place?
You know, the biggest issues with the original version, again, it had so much technology when it launched, so much innovation when it launched. It had great fuel economy and it drove great when it launched, but it aged over its life cycle. So what customers were telling us was that they wanted more fuel economy, they wanted more technology, and the ones that didn't purchase it were a little bit concerned about the image, the styling of the
vehicle. Styling, because, yeah, I would agree with that. The styling, to me, it was kind of clunky looking. The truck drove brilliantly, but it was clunky looking.
So this is 2006 when the first one came
out?
Yes,
that's correct.
So obviously the technology had moved along in that period of time.
Quite, I mean, for the entire industry, the technology changed remarkably from when it launched to where we're at today. So.
And then the first one was an all-wheel drive only, and this is all-wheel and two-wheel?
Yeah, that's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so with the first generation, again, it met its needs at the time for the customers that purchased it, but the fact that it didn't look traditional left a little bit of a question mark in some people's minds as to if it doesn't look like a truck, can it really do what trucks are supposed to do? So we wanted to change the exterior image and make it more traditional in its shape. But yet the Honda twist on that was we still wanted it to be modern and fresh and still stand out as a unique truck in this segment.
So basically for those who are not familiar with the first generation, you basically had what was almost like a sail panel for the C-pillar.
The flying buttress.
Flying buttress coming down. And now you basically have a 90-degree angle cut.
Much more traditional
so
shape.
So box and cab shape sort
That's
of.
Right.
Sort of thing.
Now, platform-wise, this is very similar to the Honda Pilot Acura MDX, is it not?
That's correct. This platform actually was intended to be applied to a pickup truck first, but we ended up prioritizing our vehicle, so it went into the MDX and the Pilot, and then now it's going into the Ridgeline.
So powertrain, pretty similar.
Right.
The suspension, kind of similar too, although you've got this unique independent rear suspension on the Ridgeline.
The suspension kinematics between the Pilot and the Ridgeline are very similar, but we did have to change almost 50% of the components to provide the strength and durability required for a truck. Obviously, there's different loads, different payload requirements, different towing requirements for a truck versus an SUV. So we made all those required changes to make the parts stronger.
And you have some real capability in this vehicle. Tell us some of the numbers in terms of payloads and towing capacity.
Yeah, as Jeff said, you know, we always are fighting the perception that if it's not body on frame, it's not capable of something. And, you know, finally, that's just a lack of education on what actually it takes to do those different things. So for us, we have a class-leading payload. It's 1,584 pounds. We also have 5,000-pound towing, and we're very proud of that as well. That's in all conditions, all vehicles, even our heaviest grade can still tow the 5,000 pounds, and it comes standard with the trailer hitch, the 7-pin connector, heavy-duty cooling fans, and ATF coolers. The customer only doesn't have to add any additional components to be able to tow.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that towing hitch you made standard just from a perception standpoint. So people would look at it and see there's a tow hitch on
that
it.
That was a very interesting thing that we came across in some clinics where customers would look at even the attitude of the vehicle. And if the back of the car was up a little bit higher than the front, they would make some conclusion that therefore it must be able to haul payload. Same with the trailer hitch. If they saw the hitch, must be able to tow. And they just assumed these things. And it was eye-opening to us that small details could cause such a perception shift in the customer. So absolutely, we wanted the trailer hitch to be standard on all the ridge lines.
So one of the things that Honda does very well is manufacture motorcycles, and a lot of people transport their bikes in the beds of their trucks. Did you talk to the guys who were on the motorcycle side of the business as you were developing this?
We actually do, and we want to make sure that all of our products, there's a nice synergy between all of our products, whether it's power sports, power equipment, motorcycles, ATVs, side-by-sides, and the trucks. And we learned that our motorcycle products were getting larger over the years. So that led us to looking at making the bed larger so we can haul our own products, right? So that's one of the reasons we added the 4 inches to the overall bed size, was to be able to haul our own stuff.
And so the overall vehicle is bigger than the first generation, correct?
It's 3 inches longer in the wheelbase. We put most of that into the bed, so the bed's now 4 inches longer than the previous
one. What's the total overall length of the bed?
The overall length of the bed with the tailgate up is 5'4" long. So if you're talking about the 5 foot class of vehicles, then we have the largest overall length of the bed.
And okay, good. I can get my cross-country skis in the back. I can get my mountain bike in the back and all that.
But your mountain bike inside as well.
Yeah.
The cab.
Oh, really? Yeah. Explain that.
Well, we have this really versatile rear seat where it folds up. It's split 60-40. It folds up out of the way. And unlike the traditional body-on-frame trucks, under the seat, you don't have the obstructions due to the construction of the car. So when you fold up our seat, you have this completely wide-open storage space. You can put many, many mountain bikes inside with the front tire on the car, on the bike. You don't have to take it off. You can also actually store items such as golf bags under that seat, because again, we have this space that no other trucks have.
One of the things, we drove the truck yesterday, and the thing that really astonishes me about it is that it doesn't drive like a truck. And I think everybody knows what driving like a truck is, okay?
Right.
But this is more like driving a car. I mean, comfortable, easy to maneuver. How'd you guys do that?
It goes back to the unibody construction and the independent suspension. The body is so much stiffer. It's 28% stiffer than the previous Ridgeline, which was already many times stiffer than any body-on-frame vehicle, just due to the fact that the whole entire cab bed structure is all one unit. So that stiffness combined with the suspension tuning, it just lends itself to a much more comfortable ride without all the compromises. It doesn't beat you to death, literally,
right,
like some of the other vehicles can, and it makes just for more enjoyable, fun drive. It's hard to not like how it feels.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. We're going to have to wrap up this segment. We still have more to talk about on the Ridgeline, but Carrie, want to thank you for coming on Autoline After Hours with Carrie and myself here.
Thanks for having me.
Real good. And we're going to be back with more just right after this.
Okay, we're inside the new Honda Ridgeline, and I think what's interesting is that for the past decade or so, all truck manufacturers have been working very, very hard at having interiors of their vehicles be more car-like, offer more comfort, offer more amenities and accessories and so on. And they've all been doing a pretty good job, and I think that the place where the Ridgeline really excels is that the interior of this vehicle feels more like a car than any truck I have had the opportunity to be in. And I mean, that starts from the steering wheel all the way through the gauges, the HVAC system, the materials that they're using on the instrument panel, nice soft touch material here, harder material down here, because after all, this is a truck. There's nice stitching on the seats. And I think that without trying to over-luxury the interior of the vehicle, what they've done is they have just simply said, okay, let's take the best that we know from our sedans and bring it to this without sacrificing any of the utility. And then they really did go big on utility. I mean, for example, we have this very large bin here that you can put pads and so on. There are a couple of outlets on the inside there. Another thing that they did, and they made a point, because let's face it, this is basically a unibody vehicle, and they were able to take advantage of space behind the rear, below the rear seats. And if we can see back here, that there's actually enough room that you could put a set of golf clubs back there, and they're saying, you know, this is something that is distinctive to what the Ridgeline can do because of the way that it has been engineered. You know, you're also finding that, you know, that they have top-notch audio in this vehicle. They have comfortable seating in the front. There's seating for people in the back, obviously, two with comfort, one who sort of has it modified. But, you know, overall, I think that when you get in this vehicle, you have a really solid sense that you're in something different. It almost strikes me that just as SUVs have morphed into crossover vehicles, while there are still SUVs that exist, this becomes almost the crossover of pickup trucks. And I think that Honda may have actually gotten the DNA for something that hasn't really existed before. And the interior, I think, really says that in a big way.
Okay, we're back from having taken a look at the interior of the vehicle, sitting around the round table. And joining us right now is Jim Loftus, let's see if I got this right, the performance lead engineer the Ridgeline. You're a chief engineer, but you had to develop how this thing rides and drives.
Exactly. My responsibility were exactly that. As you mentioned, I'm a chief engineer responsible for the overall performance of the vehicle.
So we were talking a little bit earlier about the difference between a unit body truck versus a body on frame. And sort of the way I describe it, Jim, is that on a body on frame truck, you get, I call it jiggling. I know that's not the right technical term, but explain why you get that on a body on frame and how you've avoided that with this unit body approach.
That jiggle is what we like to call aftershake, the aftershake feeling that you get with
that. Now, some truckers love that. In fact, that's what helps define what a truck is for them.
You know, I've heard that, and that's
probably in 1968.
I think it was with the technology, and people have come to accustom that. That's what they expect out of a truck. They expect that jiggle. They expect that shake. Obviously, what you're feeling on the body on frame is just the isolation. Of course, the body on frame, you know, dates way back to the horse and buggy. And finally, you have a frame, and then you have a body that is mounted right on top of that overall frame structure. So, and then of course, there's some isolation between the two. So that's a lot of times what you feel in that vehicle is you're feeling, as I mentioned, that aftershake. Where in the unibody construction, you just don't have that because you have the complete construction all tied in one. Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me that when you drive a traditional pickup truck without something in the bed, that you get more of that. I mean, is the vehicle, those vehicles tuned to take loads, and you basically have just created a structure that can deal with loads or lack thereof?
Exactly. Actually, when we talk or when we look for years, if you want to talk about the body on frame, the things you looked at were, of course, the leaf springs. So pickup trucks, body on frame trucks for years have had leaf springs. And of course, you'd look at different load ratings where you're talking half ton, three quarter ton. And of course, what did you do? You put a different leaf, you know, you put an additional leaf in the spring. And of course, that would change the what we like to call the attitude of the actual vehicle.
I.e., the rear end would sit up even higher.
Exactly, which basically would allow you to put more payload in it. The penalty for that was, of course, when you didn't have any weight in it, it was so stiff that you would get beat up, so to say, when you were driving that vehicle on a daily basis when you didn't actually have it loaded.
Right.
So we would see with some of those customers, and you see some of those customers today, they'll physically load it because they're driving it every day, which of course adds weight to the vehicle, affects fuel economy, affects even the overall steering and handling of the vehicle. Mm-hmm. In the unibody construction, you don't have that. Obviously, we can design the strength, the stiffness of the vehicle, the subframes. We set up the suspension specifically for those needs. So you really get the what we like to call the goodness of the unibody construction when you drive the vehicle, whether it's loaded or unloaded.
Okay, if anyone listening is wondering what the jet noise is, I think we must be next door to an Air National Guard base, because I'm looking at what seems to be F-16s flying overhead. So that's the background noise. But speaking of noise, you guys have done something really cool in the bed of this truck. You don't have speakers in the bed. You have what you call exciters. So tell us what that all means.
So a lot of people, and I remember the first time I actually saw it, I had the same question, or the first question that came out of my mouth is, where's the speaker? And of course, we were working with our audio engineers back in Ohio, and what the first answer out of their mouth is, well, it's the entire bed. The entire bed's the speaker. And it's like, what do you mean? What does that mean? Well, on every one of the panels, the side panels, there's what we call the exciter. The exciter is what would be similar on a normal traditional speaker would be the magnet. But the actual polypropylene glass reinforced panel itself would be the cone. So what you actually have is we have two exciters on the back of each one of those panels, those being, you know, what would be traditionally a magnet, and then once again that panel, the cone. So the entire panel itself is generating.
So the bed of the truck is essentially a speaker.
The entire bed is a speaker.
So you can turn it up to 11 more.
What's that? 11.
And of course, one
40
of the
40 actually.
And by using these exciters instead of having actual speakers, they're impervious to the weather.
And they were designed specifically for that. They're weatherproof, they're waterproof. You can use them when you're washing your car, when you're doing your landscaping. We've even filled the bed full of mulch and had the speakers running. I assure you that it does actually work.
Kind of muffled, but
well, of course, you know, you have that you have a lot of insulation
in that mulch.
But absolutely it still works. And the other thing, as far as impact strength and everything, we've protected for all that. Of course, you're in a pickup truck, right? So people are going to be loading things in and out of that bed. And of course, as Honda engineers, we've considered all of that.
You know, talking of the bed, and one thing we haven't spoken of is the fact that you guys have that trunk below the bed.
That's right.
But you've made some modifications to it.
We made some modifications, and actually by pushing the silencer in the pre-chamber forward in the vehicle, the previous generation had a step in it. By pushing that forward, we've been able to open that up for the bigger modules. We did have feedback of people saying, oh, my golf bag won't fit, those types of things. We took those right to heart and made sure that the next generation could fit all those key modules, those big coolers, your golf bags, all the things you want to take with you wherever you go.
So it's like an 82-quart cooler or something like that?
Oh, we can get an 82-quart cooler. And if you need bigger, the great thing about it is it's got the drain in the bottom. Just fill the whole thing with ice and use
beer.
The whole thing as a cooler. Exactly.
Talk about the spare, too, because on other trucks, the spare is mounted underneath the bed, and you got to sort of winch it down and drag it out, and you guys used your trunk to package the spare.
Exactly. So as you open the trunk, there's two nuts that you remove, and it's on a slider panel.
Like a tray.
And actually, there's molded in handles in that tray, and you just slide it back, and there's two areas that you just set it in the ledge. Therefore, especially with the dual action tailgate, you swing the tailgate out of the way, it's right there. You pick up the tire, you know, you change it.
Okay, now the viewers are saying, what do you mean dual action tailgate?
Dual action tailgate, of course, the signature dual action tailgate allows the tailgate to not only fold down like a traditional pickup truck, but it allows it to completely rotate out of the way, so you have
opens like a door.
Exactly. You know, it swings like a door. You can walk to back to the truck. You can get deeper into the bed, and of course, you can get into the Honda in-bed trunk.
So, let's go back to getting this thing driving the way that you want it. We talked all about the unibody construction. We talked about independent suspension, but nonetheless, you've got this thing really dialed in well from a steering, handling, acceleration, braking. Go through what some of the parameters were that you really set out to make this a benchmark in the way it drives.
From a performance standpoint, we had talked about a little bit the grand concept of the vehicle, the idea of life's adventure guide, wherever you're going to go. The performance dynamics were critical in that, and what we looked at was just this idea of personal, prepared, and capable. So those the steering, the handling, the payload were critical in all of that. So the balance, I think what you're getting to, John, is maybe the balance. How do you balance the braking, the steering, the handling? We considered it very deeply, but the whole idea of the truck, once again, is when you get in it, whether you're towing, whether you're hauling that payload, whether you're just driving back and forth to work, the idea was it was effortless. It was easy to drive in every one of those conditions. especially towing. We talked about that in towing. We talked about 5,000 pounds, you know, maintaining 5,000 pounds as standard on the vehicle. We really set out to make sure that towing 5,000 pounds was not exciting. I mean, there's nothing worse than getting out, towing a towing your boat trailer, towing a camper or something like that, and it gets squirrely on you. That's exactly where you don't want to be. So there was so much time spent balancing all those things, the brakes, the acceleration, the towing, all of those things to really make it easy for the customer and make it comfortable for the customer also, which really makes it confident. You know, it makes you very confident. It's confidence inspiring. It'll make you do those things that maybe you wouldn't do.
And you can drive this in the dirt. I'm getting the sense that we're talking about towing and driving on the highway, but you guys have set this up so people can go somewhat off-road with this.
Absolutely. And that is that is where the Honda really shines. And the expectation from people of course, you know, it's going to drive good on road. It's unibody. We get that. Oh, it's a Honda. But what people don't know is exactly that, how great this vehicle is to drive off-road. And our true advantage with the Honda Ridgeline, especially with our all-wheel drive system, is torque vectoring. When you get out on those different courses and the off-road course, it's amazing how easy the vehicle is to drive through these courses. Of course, you really don't have the understeer that you would normally feel in a traditional four-wheel drive system. So you can even there's a couple different situations where you put it in. It's hard not to drive it fast. You naturally want to get in it and drive it as fast as you can and almost try and put it off the road. So and that goes back to the old Ridgeline. It was such a pleasure and such a fun to drive vehicle, whether you were in the snow, the sand. It was really what made the Ridgeline what it is today.
Mm-hmm. You know, even though we've been talking with three different Honda executives about this truck, we've barely scratched the surface. There's a lot of neat features in that I encourage our viewers to go out and find more about, because it is a cool truck and there's a lot to it. But we're going to have to wrap up this segment anyway, Jim, and really want to thank you for having taken the time to come talk with us here today.
It was a pleasure to be here with you.
Real good. Hey, we're going to take a quick break right now, commercial break. We're going to be coming back to talk about some of the news of what's been going on.
Lear Kinexis offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts, all delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
Okay, we're back talking all about Ridgeline, other things going on in the industry. Joining us right now, Joe Philippi. Joe, great having you here.
Thank you, John. Good to be here.
Just so the viewers know, you've been on the show in the past, but to bring them up to speed, you spent a lot of time as an analyst on Wall Street, right?
35 years.
35 years. And now you're what, sort of like a consultant?
Independent consultant to investors and companies.
So you used to be a very tall man, and then you spent 35 years.
I got pounded down.
Right. All right, so you're a numbers guy. So
it's time for Dr. Data.
Okay, we got some data. So, okay, we're in Texas, right? And everybody
deep
knows.
Deep in the heart of.
Deep.
Everything's bigger in Texas.
And so naturally everybody says this is truck country.
It is.
Right?
Right.
So I was looking.
I think he's going to prove us wrong.
Well, okay, so I was looking at the numbers, and this is from the Texas DMV. The latest numbers I could get were for 2013. Number of passenger vehicles, okay? So we're talking
passenger cars?
Cars sold. And SUVs
sold.
Registered.
Registered.
Okay. In the state of Texas for 2013 is 12.8
million. 12.8
million
passenger vehicles.
Okay. Now the pickup truck category, which can light duty, heavy duty, pickup trucks, 5.8 million.
Wow.
But that doesn't count the ones up on blocks in the front yard.
There you go. You got it.
Not registered, yeah. But used on the farm.
It did say, but I mean, it seemed rather astonishing to me. I mean, that there was that big of a difference. So anyway.
But this is the biggest pickup state, right?
Without doubt.
More pickups sold in Texas than anywhere else.
Right.
Which is saying something, because California has, I want to say, something like 10 million more people in the population than does Texas. yet Texas buys more pickups than California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they're all urbanites and suburbanites and, you know, other than the sort of suburban cowboys.
Yeah.
You know, it's all farms.
So Joe, John and I have been talking to the Honda people about the Ridgeline. You've driven the Ridgeline. What are your takeaways from this car?
It's incredibly quiet. I use the term well screwed together. Everything feels solid. The interior materials, even on the base truck, for example, the IP, you know, excluding whether you get the bigger screen for nav or whatever, all the surface materials are the same, and it's all high quality material. And it's amazingly quiet no matter which version you get. It's bigger than most of the competitors, I think, than all the competitors.
Even though it doesn't look bigger, cabin width
inside.
Yeah. But it doesn't look bigger than the others.
No, it doesn't. But the cabin width inside, you get a lot of elbow room in there. And it's comfortable in the back seat.
All right, so Colorado is doing really well. Tacoma continues to lead the segment. The Frontier is old, but it's still selling.
Because the whole segment's up.
Right.
Yeah.
So I mean, do you see from a financial perspective, from the analyst perspective, that this is going to make some inroads into that segment? Is it going to make it larger? Is it going to take away from someone? What do you think?
I think it might keep some competitors out. They may start rethinking their strategy, and we know.
There's only two left, right? Ford and Ram.
And you count Volkswagen, maybe. You know, they talk about the possibility of bringing I think it's the Amarok from South America, which is a pretty capable-looking truck. But, you know, again, there's only so much room. You've got 250,000 or so Ridgeline sold. About 175,000 are still with their original owners. So there's a great loyal owner base out there. And if you look at this new truck versus the other truck, all the improvements, all the features, the safety features, if you will, and all the other fun things in terms of accessories, et cetera, I think you could get a lot of folks stepping up and turning it over. You know, is it going to have a big impact on the market? You know, at maybe 20,000 a year, that's not going to move the needle very much.
Mm-hmm.
But the key for Honda, from a financial standpoint, is selling out their targeted volume, right? So, you know, sell another 250,000 over the next five to 6 years of a cycle. Mm-hmm. Now, this truck is very late. This was supposed to have been a 12, right? It was introduced in 2006, and it was supposed to be replaced in 2012. But a little thing called the crash of 2008 and 2009 got in the way, and everything got deferred.
Right. So is it a good time for it?
I think it is. I mean, you got lots of advertising out there by GM and, you know, Chevy and GMC. Lots of talk about the possibility of, and a new Tacoma, again, pitching, you know, the mid-sized truck, if you will. It's probably a good time to be in the marketplace. Plus the fact that, you know, the economy is not growing as fast as we'd like, but the economy is healthy.
Right.
And, you know, tradesmen need pickup trucks. They may not need a full-size half-ton, true half-ton, if you will, to three-quarter ton, but this will fill, you know, a lot of duty applications.
So all of us, we've driven the new Tacoma, and we've driven the new Colorado and Canyon. What do you think, John, in terms of, will somebody who is a Tacoma intender say, you know what, I think I'll go look at that Ridgeline?
I think unlikely. You know, the Tacoma is a really hardcore truck. If you want to do serious off-roading, it's got all the capability of doing, and it's got that macho image. This Ridgeline is not macho at all. In fact, some of the styling characteristics, as I pointed out, are almost delicate, you know, almost feminine. I think that this Ridgeline is going to appeal to people who otherwise would not buy a pickup. You've got the loyal owners that bought the new one. They'll come back bought the old one. They'll come back for the new one. I think this is going to appeal to people who said, you know, those trucks, even though they're called midsize, they're still too damn big. They are hard to step up into, even though it's not as bad as a full-size pickup. They ride with the jiggly ride that I was describing earlier. This one does not. I think this is going to open up the market to people who otherwise would say, you know, I'm going to go with an SUV, but now I'm going to go with this Ridgeline because it meets my needs and it's got a bed in the back.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing that intrigues me, because the old Ridgeline never really, I've yet to see one, to be honest with you, with a cap on it. They tell me there are caps.
I've never seen
for the old Ridgeline, right? Incredibly difficult to put a cap with that slanted bed top and then the buttress in the back, right? Really difficult. The new one was basically designed to put a conventional cap on, and they've got, I think, a three-section hard tonneau that flips back that makes it a lot more practical. Now, if you're an SUV owner, you do a lot of outdoors things, fishing, whatever, and you got a lot of dirty stuff, you know, duck decoys, God knows what, you generally don't want to throw it in the back of your SUV. Right, I have a Grand Cherokee.
And Joe, by the way, is a hunter, and he has all that stuff,
and then some. But you know, very often I'm going to get bags of mulch and 2x4s or whatever. I can't just throw it in the back of my Grand Cherokee because the cabin space is limited, even with the second row seat down. In this case, I can do all that, and I've got a bed that tailgate flops down. I can put sheets of plywood in easily. All of a sudden, I got a fairly practical vehicle
right. That
is really nicely appointed.
You know, and it's interesting, you mentioned the Grand Cherokee and...
Unibody.
And so we were talking about this, but you remember that Jeep calls it Uniframe. They don't call it Unibody. And it's almost as though, I think a lot of people might perceive, you know, the whole unibody thing as being, that can't be capable. And you know, you've got a Grand Cherokee.
Yeah, it's light duty like a car. No, the Grand Cherokee is, you can take it on a Rubicon Trail. Right. Just put on rock rails and bigger tires and you're ready to go.
Right.
Yeah, that's one tough truck.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Joe, I'm interested. You saying you think they're only going to sell 20,000 of these Ridgelines?
I may be wrong. I'd have to check my numbers. But yeah. I think they're going to do really well.
Because I want to say, with the original Ridgeline, I want to say the first year they did like 50,000 the first year. I don't know if they've got the manufacturing capacity to do that, but man, at 20,000 or that doesn't move my needle a whole lot.
No, I think I'm probably wrong on that. I'd have to go back and check my numbers.
Okay.
But you know, they had the first mover advantage with the first Ridgeline. You know, now they've got, I think, a really great advantage with a dramatically upgraded vehicle in terms of, you know, cabin space. It's bigger, even though it's the same overall exterior envelope. So you got more cabin space. You got the entire suite of safety features.
Okay, you're an analyst. You look at all the numbers. What do you think is going to happen to the profitability of this segment? You know, Chevy, GMC have jumped in. You know, Honda's now jumping in. There might be others coming into it, too. Sounds to me like they're going to have to slice the profits more thinly.
One more entrant, and that's the break point on profitability, because then everybody's got to fill their targeted sales volume. And what happens? We start discounting. We start, you know, doing aggressive leasing deals, et cetera. And that's what I worry about when I read headlines that you know, Ford's thinking about the Ranger, Sergio is thinking about the, you know, what do we do with a Dakota-sized vehicle, or bringing something even smaller from South America. And there goes profitability.
Is there any possibility that this will eat into full size? I mean, it hasn't happened yet, but do you think people will become more intrigued with these?
Only on the margin. Only on the margin. There's so many more things you can do with a full size pickup in terms of, you know, hauling stuff.
Right.
That I think it's only going to be on the margin.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we've talked about Ridgeline.
One point, though. If gasoline prices start going up again, you know, dramatically, then I think full-size pickups, as they inevitably have in the past, then I think you got a situation where you might see, you know, some erosion of share of the full-size.
What's dramatic?
A 5% would be dramatic.
No. I mean, in terms of gasoline price hike.
Oh, well, right now, I guess we're around $2. I'm going to say, because that's what I see at home in New Jersey. You know, I say if we get back up to $3, that's got to...
It's the rate of increase, really, that causes
it suddenly starts happening a lot.
You know, if you boil the frog slowly, no problems. But if you see spike hikes...
Well, 3 months ago at the local BP, I was paying $1.48 a gallon. Now it's $1.98 a gallon, you know, plus or minus a penny.
Yeah, but that's still so cheap. Nobody cares that it went up that fast.
Well, but at the same time, the fuel economy of my vehicle has improved dramatically.
Of the Grand Cherokee.
Of all of them.
Of all.
You know, yeah.
Okay, what else is going on? We've talked enough Ridgeline now.
All right, so we had sales come in for April, and it looks pretty robust.
Yep. Bounced back from March.
Mm-hmm. Strong SAR, 17.5, but some weaknesses at the edges, too.
Yeah. Wrangler is just a 1% increase, speaking of Jeep that we were talking about earlier. Cherokee down 7% for April. Renegade up 131%. So this leads me to wonder, Joe, is it people actually going for smaller vehicles and foregoing the slightly larger vehicles?
I mean, well, there's three almost totally different segments, if you will, within the Jeep brand. I mean, Cherokee's a great vehicle, but I think, well, it's hard to tell. I mean, Chrysler has had such aggressive incentive money on virtually everything. But, you know, in the case of the Wrangler, summer's coming, right? So yeah. People start thinking about outdoors and, you know, there are a lot of ways to pitch a Wrangler.
Right.
To
but the Renegade, I mean, it's on fire.
It's the hottest segment in the business right now.
Yeah, I mean,
compact SUV.
Yeah, we look at the Chevy Trax, you look at Buick Encore, you look at a little vehicle like the Renegade and others. And, you know, it's probably a great second car, third car in a family for a youngster. You got all-wheel drive capability. You got a complete suite of safety systems. Not surprising to some extent.
And, you know, the other thing, too, is if you go back a year ago, Renegade was still in a ramp-up. So the percentage increase right now is going to look
pretty realistic.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at Wrangler, I dare say they're capacity constrained.
I think you're right. I don't think they can another handful of units out.
Look, this is why Chrysler or FCA wants to rejigger its whole manufacturing footprint. They need more Rams. They need more Cherokees. You know, this is why they're getting rid of the 200 and the Dart and I guess the Patriot and
Compass.
And the Compass are going to get broomed out, you know, again, to make more room for Cherokees.
Yeah, and then they'll have the, something akin to a 7/8 scale Grand Cherokee is in the pipeline that's going to be built in South America, in Brazil.
In Brazil.
Pernambuco.
All right, one of the pairs that I enjoy looking at is Cadillac and Lincoln. And I thought in terms of sales, Cadillac is continuing to just decline and decline and decline. So for April, its sales were down by nearly 29%.
That's a big drop.
And Lincoln sales were up by 20%. Now, the thing that I thought was most telling is the fact that, you know, Cadillac's strength has been the light truck in terms of SRX, Escalade, and so on, right? And so for the month of April, its light truck sales were down 35%. Meanwhile, over at Lincoln, they were up 53%. And when you look at the actual number of vehicles, Lincoln light truck outsold Cadillac light truck.
See, that blows my mind. That's I would not have expected.
Well, to a great extent, Cadillac is out of capacity on Escalades. They're kind of stretched.
So that explains why the number of Escalades is down?
But at the same time, SRX is going through its run out as you finally start ramping up production of the XT5, which, you know, and SRX was their volume leader at Cadillac. Most people wouldn't normally think about that because, you know, they didn't, it's not a striking vehicle to a lot of folks.
Or is it when you think Cadillac, you think Escalade?
That's the first thing that comes to mind. Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a big fight within Cadillac over allocation, U.S. market versus rest of world. And I know that Johan Denison, who runs Cadillac, has said that it's a constant battle. And when he allocates more product to, say, like the Middle East or something where those Escalades are red hot, he gets a massive amount of complaints from his U.S. dealers. So part of it may be that Cadillac's U.S. Escalade sales are a little soft right now, but globally they're just going gangbusters.
Well, you know, Escalades do really well in the fleet market, you know, the livery car market, both the long wheelbase as well as the short wheelbase. And they've been backing off a little bit on their fleet
General
sales.
General Motors has.
Yeah,
just,
I mean, they
Cadillac.
Still make very good money, even though, you know, there's a fleet price. But once you start trying to allocate things to, you know, does that side suffer versus shipping vehicles to Middle East or China or wherever?
Mm-hmm. So speaking of luxury vehicles, I was surprised to see that BMW sales were down in April by
7.5%
for April and 9.5% year over year. Then this week, or a couple weeks ago, that they came out with the extended range for the i3, their electric vehicle, bringing it up to about 114-mile range.
From what, about 80?
Yeah, it was 80 miles before.
Yeah.
But then it came out that the head of i8, the manager of iPowertrain, and the head of iProduct Management all defected and went to a Chinese startup mobility company, which is based by some Tencent holding. Now, John, you were just in China recently.
We were. We were in Beijing and for the Beijing Auto Show. And, it's kind of interesting. We're just as in the U.S. we see tech companies getting all into the automotive industry led by Google and Apple. No, we're seeing the same thing happening in China as well. Tech companies jumping into the automotive market. So the fact that they poached three of the top guys, technical guys especially, away from the I brand tells me two things. Number one, they laid down a lot of money to get those guys to peel them away from BMW. And this is going to hurt BMW too, by the way, I got to believe. And the other thing, you know, it shows how much interest there is in China of getting into what they call new energy vehicles.
So these would be electric cars, hydrogen cars, both?
Look, China has put all its bets on battery electric, and there's massive, massive amount of incentives. So I was in Beijing. One of the ways that the government there is trying to reduce car sales, because the traffic congestion is the absolute worst I've seen anywhere in the world, they've limited how you can get a license plate. You have to enter a lottery.
Right.
And it's expensive. In Beijing, to get just a license plate is $13,500. But if you get an electric car, boom, boom, you don't have to get in the lottery. You don't have to pay a penny for your license plate. So this is one of the ways that they're really pushing the industry into electrics.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, they talk about, oh, we have to make the skies clean again. And believe me, the pollution in Beijing is horrific. It's absolutely as bad as you've ever heard. And it's interesting to me that the Chinese have said battery is going to be it. They're not going with hydrogen fuel cells, whereas Japan and Germany are really starting to push hydrogen fuel cells, and we might have a big battle there between which technology is going to come out on top. And we got to tell everybody, we're joined by another one of our colleagues right now, Ken Gross. Ken, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. Good morning, everyone.
Morning. Yeah.
So, we were just talking about electric vehicles. Gary mentioned that three of the top guys from the BMW I brand have been peeled away from BMW and joined a Chinese IT company, tech company, called Tencent.
So you're highly familiar with BMW, Ken. What do you see going on there? I mean, their sales in the U.S. are going down. Everybody's paying attention to what's going on with Volkswagen, but, you know, here's Daimler's going up, these guys going down. What's happening, you think?
I don't know if I can explain it. I mean, they make a great line of cars. They've expanded exponentially over the last few years. So I really don't know. I mean, you might look at Mercedes-Benz and say they have a car in every single niche, and BMW doesn't. So for some people, comparing that way, but it's a mystery, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in fact, BMW earnings were down for the first time in quite a while, and their excuse is they're investing more heavily
in technology
yeah. like not just electric vehicles, but autonomous and connected and all that other sort of stuff, too. But isn't everybody else doing the same thing? I don't think that argument washes necessarily.
No, you know, this whole thing with the defection of the three guys from the I group, the i3 has really been somewhat of a disappointment. You know, it's very funky. The range was 80 miles. Now it's up 20-odd, 25% or so to 100, 110. But it's still not, you know, a very practical, everyday kind of vehicle. You know, it's not like a potential Model 3 or a Chevy Bolt.
Yeah, what happens when the Bolt comes out? 200-mile range, and here's BMW saying, oh, we have these new batteries, and they're more highly efficient. And
yeah, but at least the car costs more.
Ironically, this is their 100th anniversary this year. So can they make it through the next century? I'm sure they will, but it's tough for them right now.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, do you think you know, you were saying that, they make great cars and, handle well, drive well. I mean, is sort of the bloom off the rose, not the yellow rose of Texas, for BMW in terms of being a real aspirational vehicle, as it has been for many, many years?
I think there's definitely something to that. There are so many great cars to buy today. There's no longer the kind of yuppie, typical BMW driver who's flashing his headlights to pass you and so forth. So this could be a real time of introspection for them.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they've proliferated so many models and so many variants off the same platform that they confuse customers in some respect.
But yeah, you've got Mercedes your loyalists. Do the same thing. Mercedes has equally as many permutations of models.
Well, they're chasing each other, right? With the coupes.
Mercedes smells blood. They're saying that they could surpass BMW this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't. You know, the term "smelling blood in the water" is probably a good.
Yeah. Well, and Lexus has come back, and I mean
right.
they're gaining the share that they lost.
But I'm talking globally too. Yeah. You know, and Lexus, even though it aspires to be a global brand, it's still not quite there yet.
So you know, you're mentioning the whole BMW investing in autonomy and car sharing and so on and so forth. So what do you guys make of the deal, as it were, between FCA and Google for FCA providing Google with 100 hybrid Pacificas that will be built specifically for autonomous car testing?
I got to jump in on this. I don't see what the big hype. Well, I do understand what the big hype is, but to me, this is no different than FCA saying, hey, we just did a deal with Bosch to develop autonomous cars, or with Continental, or with Delphi. The fact that it's Google and FCA is what's gotten headlines all over. This is no different than an automaker ever, today or in the past, saying, hey, let's work with a supplier to develop a new technology.
And we don't know everything about what they're developing together, right? Because they're talking to Delphi, they're talking to Continental, they're talking to Bosch and others that we
probably
don't
necessarily
know. This is
not an exclusive agreement. The agreement
right.
says Google can work with any other car company it wants.
Right.
Chrysler, FCA can work with whatever other supplier it wants. I don't see that this is as big a deal as the headlines
are
screaming.
What's sort of interesting is that right now Google has 24, 25 Lexus RX 450Hs running around autonomously, okay? And those cars apparently were purchased by Google, that they basically went to car dealers and Cupertino.
Bought them and ripped them apart.
And bought them and with this.
Toyota had nothing to do with the deal.
Right. And so here we have a case where basically, you know, the announcement from Sergio comes out and says, you know, we've got this relationship and we're gonna be working with them. Now, one of the things that occurred to me is that, you know, we've all been in cars that were still being engineered, and especially cars that were being engineered with, you know, high technology braking systems, emergency braking, so on and so forth, where there's always this enormous amount of electronic gear in, you know, below the instrument panel and ton of it in the trunk.
Right.
You know, you got a hybrid or a minivan, you suddenly have the architecture where you can readily deal with all that stuff.
That's what that stow-and-go hole
there,
is
there
for.
There you go.
Right.
Throw all the electronics in that.
Well, I mean, maybe you're developing, you're going to use hybrid minivans, right? PHEV
right.
minivans combined with the Google technology suite, if you will, and you know, go from there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
to me, that's just more PR spin. You know, they're hybrids. Okay, whoopee-doo. I don't see how that affects it being an autonomous vehicle at all.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, we know it's coming. So, you know, the hybrid vehicles will be obviously adopting, you know, all the autonomous features that are available to be integrated into any vehicle.
You were going to say, Ken?
I think it shortcuts the process for Google in a good way. I mean, and the funny little cars that they were testing, I'm not sure that's a serious proposition for most people. And it also sends a message that says, when we get this technology, as we're developing it, it can go anywhere. So you can still drive perhaps the car you like, but we'll take care of it being autonomous.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I mean, the idea is that this is a well-used term, plug and play, right? Where you get vehicles that are literally equipped to be able to plug in autonomy in a box, the type of thing that Delphi has been developing,
look,
for example.
Here's the advantage for Google in this deal is Chrysler's got a proving grounds. They know how to put vehicles through a duty cycle. They've got all the test equipment. They've got all the people that know how to do that. Google does not. And so why create its own proving ground? Right now, all their testing has been done out on the open road or in computer simulation. This gives them the opportunity to work with an OEM and put it through its entire duty cycle and see how it works.
Well, just think about what the announcement from Ford about 3 months ago, that they finally have a system, I guess it's LIDAR-based, if I remember right, that can see through the snow, right? Because, you know, all these Google cars are running around in sunny California in beautiful weather all the time, and people say, well, wait a minute, it rains.
Well, they got them in Kirkland, Washington, and it rains up there a lot.
But it snows in Detroit.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me that 60 years ago, almost to the year, General Motors had its Firebird 2 at the Motoramas, a four-passenger car that was designed turbine-powered to run on a guided highway. They didn't have the technology. They anticipated that someday this could happen. It was only 60 years ago.
So how did they guide it?
They didn't.
Oh, okay.
Just like the those nose cones on the Cadillac Cyclone, those Dagmar-esque nose cones, they knew they wanted some type of a sensor. They didn't have the technology. They figured it would fit in these. And in the meantime, they looked like a Hollywood starlet.
Well, it wasn't too many years ago that there was an experiment, I think in California somewhere, Southern California, where they were running some Buicks on a dedicated highway.
Yeah, down in San Diego.
It was dedicated in the sense that they had to go and embed magnets.
Mags, right. Yes. Mags, yeah.
Magnets, like, right. Every couple of feet. And there's a famous picture of a line of Buicks driving nose to tail with the drivers with their hands out the window to show that they weren't doing it.
Right.
And that's been the big change that's happened since DARPA initiated the DARPA challenge, is that Wi-Fi and GPS has obviated the need for that kind of infrastructure. You no longer need sensors embedded in the pavement. You no longer need transponders at every intersection. Right. And that's why we're seeing this race forward so quickly right now in autonomy.
But to that point, they're now talking about a line of trucks on the highway where they're being guided. They're efficiently running right close to one another. Hopefully, we will no longer have to pull out and pass the truck that's doing 60.
Yeah.
Passing the truck that's doing
Yeah, because it'll be an endless line.
It'll be like a train.
But
a true road train.
Exactly.
What's wrong with the train? I mean, why do you have to do that?
Good question.
Well, they do anyway. I mean, you know, this country runs on trucks and trains, too. But nonetheless, they're just trying to figure out how to make it more efficient. Because, again, the number one complaint of every single trucking company in this country is they can't get drivers.
Yeah.
It's the hardest thing to get. And it's getting worse, not better.
Yeah.
So if you can have these platoons of trucks with one driver essentially driving four or five semis, bingo, you've solved a lot of your driver problem.
Well, you could end up with a cab and a driver and a half a dozen powered trailers, not even complete trucks, right? They're all linked together somehow, you know, with bogies in between, but the whole thing is powered. Although I think if there's a consumer driver lobby, there's going to be a big outcry that, how do I get around some guy with, you know, there's 10 trailers in a row? You can't bash.
Teamsters weigh in on this, too.
Yeah, that's good. That's a very good point, Ken. Yeah, absolutely.
You need to hear from bureaucrats.
So we, Ken, you joined us. What is your take on the Ridgeline, to sort of bring this full circle a little
bit? I'm very impressed. I truly am. My initial thought going in was that it's something of a wuss truck. And where I live in Virginia, I mean, you have trucks, you know. I'm the only guy in the neighborhood who doesn't own a truck or a tractor. I wasn't prepared for how smooth, quiet, efficient, and how good it is. I mean, it's something I would actually consider buying, because you don't have to climb up Mount Everest to get inside it. You don't have that undulation on even a smooth road that's so common with trucks. Tons of fascinating features, including this tailgate speaker. But it's the real deal. I just drove on the handling course and back-to-back with Tacomas and Colorados, and the Honda just buzzes around merrily, and the others bounce and jump and twist. So I don't know. I don't think they're going to convince the guys who drive the big Fords and Chevys and Dodges unless gasoline goes up over $4 again. But for a lot of people, this vehicle makes sense.
Of course, that could be the kiss of death when journalists say, oh, I love this car. I might even buy it.
Every journalist.
And as I recall, you own a Magnum, right?
Yes.
Every journalist in the business loves station
wagons.
That's
the point.
Diesel wagons with manual transmissions, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We're living proof.
So we all love the things that nobody else wants to buy.
That's right. Hey, with that, we're going to have to wrap this up. But Ken Gross, thanks for joining us on the show. Joe Philippi, having you here. And Gary, we ought to do this again in another week.
We'll probably be inside a building, though. So.
Yeah, we'll go back to the studio. Okay, everyone, thanks for having tuned in. Really appreciate it.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. And by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.